Believe it or not. The Baker's Broadcast, presented by the makers of Fleischmann's Yeast on behalf of the 30,000 bakers in the United States and Canada, with Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra, Harriet Hilliard, Shirley Lloyd, and, believe it or not, Robert Ripley.
Look out for that dynamite!
It's on fire! Run for your lives!
Charlie, come back here!
You'll be blown to pieces!
Come back here, you fool!
Hey, Ben, what was that?
Well, Ozzie, that was the explosion that blew up Charles Simonson.
Charles Simonson?
Yes.
Who is he?
Well, Bob Ripley will tell us about him in just a minute.
Steady mill narrat, rough not sneaky saw. He rummed lab, a hip little hip, when croy, not sob. Nick cam lad, lackle spot, lad rib.
Now, wait a minute, Ben. I give up. What's this all about?
Well, that's one of Bob Ripley's live, believe it or not, for tonight. But Bob will be here in a moment to explain it all for you. Right now, let's go with some music on.
Okay, Ben. Here's little Shirley Lloyd to sing for us.
There's frost on the moon and snow on the ground, but with you around, there's spring in my heart. Well, I don't need my raccoon, 'cause everything's fine. As long as you're mine, there's spring in my heart. I know why I'm married, I'm in love's old tune. Even in January, honey, it feels like June. There's frost on the moon, but what do I care? As long as you're there, there's spring in my heart.
And here he is, radio's regal revealer of remarkable realities, believe it or not, Robert Ripley.
Greetings, everybody.
Hello,
greetings,
Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Say, Bob, howdy, what was that explosion that just went off?
Yes, what's it all about?
Well, one cold December day in 1928, a road gang was blasting rock along the banks of the Wisconsin River. After many hours of fruitless labor because of the frozen ground, one of the men approached Charles Simonson, foreman of the gang, who was standing a little way down the road.
Hello, Simonson.
What you doing, Bill?
Just getting some wood for that fire over there.
Fire? Are you crazy? Get over there and put it out.
But, Simonson...
You crazy fool, don't you know there's a ton of dynamite laying around here? You want to blow us all to kingdom come?
Listen, Simonson, we moved all the powder out of the way. I checked the boxes myself. I tell you, it's safe.
Nothing's safe in this wind. What about those flying sparks? Go back and put that fire out.
Okay, you're the boss. But I know it's safe. Why, there ain't a box of dynamite within a mile.
Bill, what was that?
Something's wrong. The boys are running like mad.
Look, what's that box over there by the fire? It looks like...
It's dynamite. I thought I moved it all. I thought I...
You fool, I told you this would happen. You...
The sparks. They're falling on the box. It's catching fire.
Wait.
Come on. Let's get out of here.
I'll fix this.
Simonson, what are you going to do?
There's 100 sticks of dynamite in that box. Enough to kill us all. I'm going to get it.
You're crazy. Save yourself while you got a chance.
Simonson, go back. The dynamite's going off.
Stop him, somebody. Stop him. Don't let him do it. He'll be blowing to pieces.
He's picked it up. He's got it in his arms.
He hasn't got a chance. Simonson, put it down and run.
And believe it or not, no one was killed in that explosion. Although 106 of dynamite, enough to blow up a regiment exploded in Charles Simonson's arms, he is still alive to tell about it. And I want to introduce him right now, the man who lived through that dynamite explosion, Mr. Charles Simonson.
Good evening, everybody.
Gosh, you're certainly lucky to be alive, Mr. Simonson.
What's that?
Mr. Simonson's unbelievable experience has left him partially deaf and blind. You know, there's enough power in 100 sticks of dynamite properly placed to completely destroy the largest building on Earth. But believe it or not, in Mr. Simonson's case, only one of his bones was broken, a bone in the palm of his hand. Is that right, Mr. Simonson?
That's right, Mr. Ripley.
You know, you've been luckier than most people. Sometimes the most trivial accident causes the most serious results. Charles Hess of Baltimore laughed so hard that he dislocated his jaw. And Charles Brown of Tonopah sneezed and broke his leg. And Bobby Leach, who went over Niagara Falls in a barrel and lived, was killed by slipping on a banana peel in Australia. And when Julia Hopkins of Gary, Indiana, was taking a bath not so long ago, she slipped on a cake of soap and skidded out of the window and fell three stories.
Well, what happened to her, Bob? Was she killed?
Oh, no. Only embarrassed. You see, and Calchas, the Greek philosopher, was told that he would die on a certain day. When the day arrived, he was enjoying such good health that he laughed at the prediction, and he laughed so hard that he caused his own death. But you topped them all, Mr. Simonson. Tell me, what do you remember about that accident?
Only that they found the rim off my cap across the river 600 feet away.
Gosh, Mr. Simonson, I think you're a brave and a lucky fellow. Are you ever sorry you took that wild chance?
Only when I shave.
Only when you shave? Well, I don't get how's that.
I still have some sandstone in my face. It ruins the razor.
I bet you never asked a barber for a close shave, do you?
Oh, no. I should say not. One was enough.
I agree with you. Thank you very much, Mr. Simonson, for coming here tonight. And I hope you'll stay away from dynamite, because, you know, a dynamite explosion like yours has been known to kill people, believe it or not.
Bob, what's my believe it or not for tonight?
Ben, I have two of them for you tonight. In India, there are nearly 300 million Hindus, and every morning they repeat this same prayer. All life is good, and bread is the great mother of all life. And in Ethiopia, Ben, the Galus tribe show their respect for bread in a very picturesque way. They build their temples of worship in the shape of large loaves of bread.
Well, Bob, you've certainly shown us that down through the ages and throughout the world, bread has been recognized as the great life-sustaining food. But it's only been recently that scientists have found out why bread is such a wonderful food. One interesting fact is that bread constitutes one of our most important sources of muscle-building protein. We actually get more protein from bread and other wheat products in our diet than from any other class of food. And these proteins from bread are proteins used by the body for building and maintaining muscle tissue. That's why it's so important for children to eat plenty of bread. It replaces the tremendous amount of energy they're always using up. It also helps them to grow big and strong and firm muscles. It's the proteins that make up the supporting walls of a crumb of bread. And it's this lacy-like, porous structure that makes bread light and fluffy and makes bread so easy to digest. So always have plenty of bread on your table. Encourage your family to eat more of it by serving a variety, whole wheat, rye, and raisin, as well as white bread. Make bread a part of every meal you eat.
And now, Ozzy, I would like to present a cab recollect to you.
A cab recollect?
Yes, from Washington.
Now, wait a minute. What's this cab recollect business?
Well, I have a cab recollect right here in the studio tonight, Harriet. Mr. Radman.
To dinner, as we say in cab recollect.
So you're a cab recollect. Nice talk.
Yes, you'll know address. I keep stiff, you'll know.
And now in good old-fashioned English?
I said, why, certainly. I speak cab recollect fluently.
Well, where does a man come from who speaks cab recollect?
Why, he's an American. Believe it or not, he was born in Norfolk, Virginia. and is not an interpreter.
Oh, come on now, Bob. What's the catch?
Mr. Radman lives in Washington, where every language in the world is spoken, and he got tired of hearing all that confusing gibberish, so he decided to invent his own language. And Cab Wrecklot was the result. Believe it or not, Cab Wrecklot is just English spoken backwards. K-C-A-B is B-A-C-K, back, and Wrecklot is R-E-K-L-A-T, which is a T-A-L-K-E-R, talker. In other words, back talker.
Oh, I see. Well, do you talk to yourself, Mr. Radman, or is there someone who can understand you?
I had a friend who could understand me. We talked it for years in front of people, but they never caught on to what we were saying.
Well, Mr. Radman isn't the only man who does things backwards. You know, in Japan, they beckon to you when they want you to leave, and they wave you away when they want you to come forward. And if they like you very much, they hiss you. In Albania, they shake their heads when they mean yes, and they nod when they mean no. All you need is practice. Isn't that right, Mr. Radman?
Yo telespa, retsen naslan, tehedo iresi ate.
What did you say?
I said, absolutely, Mr. Nelson. That's all there is to it.
Well, how about pig Latin? Anke uye istame admonre?
Esye, but I don't like it as much as talking backwards.
Well, you never make a good Chinaman. You know, I think Mr. Radman would have a little trouble over there. You see, the heathen Chinese is peculiar. He's the backward champion of the world. A Chinaman laughs when he's sad. He cries when he's glad. He wears skirts and his wife wears pants. And he puts his vest on over his coat. He takes off his shoes instead of his hat when entering a house. He scratches his foot instead of his head when he's puzzled. He mounts a horse backwards, rows a boat standing up, and shakes hands with himself when he meets a friend. He wears white instead of black when in mourning, writes fractions upside down, and reads a book backwards.
And from what I've heard of the Chinaman's music, I think he sings backwards too, doesn't he, Bob?
Say, that sounds like a challenge there, Radman. How about it? Can you sing a song?
Retsam Naslan Lu Izig M Imas Tissum.
Retsam Naslan. Can that be Mr. Nelson?
That's right. I said, if Mr. Nelson will give us some music.
Well, the music doesn't have to go backwards, does it? To read some madman, Radman?
Oh, no. Such is strong. Just the word.
Well, would you like to sing?
Oh.
What would you like to sing?
Show me. Wahus emi fjordag imo.
What's that?
Show me the way to go home.
Okay. Okay.
Wahus emi fjordag imo. Mid deret nad snow at ag a deb. I da a el silker dwabana rua aga nasi inogger at yim de. Ires reve I yam mayor. Revolt now ra east ra mayof. Or next yola ire em gnignis tahet gnaf. Wahas emi yod agimo.
Thank you very much. That was Mr. Paul Radman singing Show Me the Way to Go Home backwards. Or I should say, Wahas em et yod agimo. Ive libte roton.
And that was Mr. Ripley saying, believe it or not, believe it or not.
I've got those, oh, what an easy job you've got. All you do is wave a stick blue. I've got those, what would you do if you had to work instead of singing a couple of songs blue? Isn't it funny? It always looks sunny on the other side of the street. Everything you do is tough, while the other guy's job is sweet. I've got those, get hot kid and smile if it hurts. Now you don't drink, you must be nerds blue. I've got those, you never sing my favorite number. Don't you ever play a rumba blue. You'll understand if my hair turns to gray. or they have to take me away. I've got those, oh, what an easy job you've got. All you do is wave a stick blue.
Hey, Ozzie, come on over here and meet some pals of mine, will you? They're real guys. Well, you don't want to. Just a bum sport. Maybe we ain't good enough for you.
When did you shave off your mustache?
Well, I've never had a mustache.
Oh, yes, you did when you played in Cupcake, Arizona.
But I've never been to Cupcake, Arizona.
Young man, are you calling me a liar?
I say there, orchestra fellow. Can't you play something peppy and sippy, like Kitten on the Keys or something?
Hello, Ozzie.
Hello.
What are you saying hello to me for? You don't know me. Play something soft.
Play something soft.
Mr. Nelson, you want it on the phone?
Hey, I got a friend who's written a marvelous song.
Gee, you don't look like your pictures.
Hey, Oz, can you get the cover charges taken off?
What an easy racket you've got.
You'll understand if my hair turns to gray and they have to take me away. I've got those, oh, what an easy job you've got. All you do is wave a stick blue.
Here he is again, Robert Ripley. Okay, Bob.
Well, you've all been reading about the $27 million collection of paintings that Andrew Mellon has given to the government. Well, the masterpiece of this collection is the Madonna of Alba, for which Mr. Mellon paid $1,166,000. Now, mind you, this is for one single painting. Yet Raphael, the artist who painted it, only received $1 a day, or a total of $50, for this work. Mr. Mellon paid over $500,000 for another painting, The Annunciation, for which the artist, Van Eyck, received only $2. He paid $200,000 for Dürer's painting of a young man, for which the artist received only a dozen oysters for dinner one night. However, if you judge by the size, the most expensive painting of all was a miniature by Holbein, only 1 inch square, yet it sold for $25,000. Raphael painted his most famous Madonna on a barrel head in payment for a 25-cent restaurant bill. And this same painting, the Madonna of the Chair, is now valued at more than $1 million. But aside from the money value of great works of art, there are many strange stories behind the actual work itself. For instance, the well-known picture of Washington crossing the Delaware was painted by a German living on the bank of the River Rhine. If Washington had tried to use boats of this type, so heavily loaded on the Delaware, he would have drowned his entire army. And this same picture shows the American flag, which, believe it or not, was not created until a year after Washington had made this famous crossing. And this evening, I would like to present a radio sketch about one of the most remarkable pictures ever made, a portrait of the great English writer Henry Fielding, painted by his famous friend, William Hogarth. Let us roll back the years to 1765, when Dick's Coffee House in London was a gathering place for all the celebrities of the day. Here, late one evening, in a corner stall, sat two men listening intently to a discussion about a birthmark.
I beg to differ with you, Benjamin. Henry Fielding, God rest his soul, will go down in history as a great dramatist. And in Tom Thumb, he wrote some of his greatest lines.
Well, David, I know you were a great friend of Fielding, but you must admit he was a better novelist than a playwright.
I doubt it.
Well, perhaps you are right. Hogarth used to say the same thing, if you respect the opinion of a painter.
Yes, Hogarth was of my mind. Oft times, while he was alive, he'd confide to me that Fielding was more of a genius with the pen than Hogarth himself with the brush.
Yes, Hogarth's picture of Fielding proved that.
The picture, gentlemen. There's something very strange about that picture of Fielding.
Yes? What is it, David?
Gentlemen, do you believe in ghosts?
Ghosts? Why?
Let me tell you about that picture Hogarth drew of Fielding. It was about 11 years ago, 1754, I believe, that I went around to visit Hogarth in his studio. I found him sitting dejectedly before a blank canvas. The sun was about to set, and a rosy glow flooded the lawn.
Hello, David.
Well, Master Hogarth, why do I find you so downcast? Has the muse forsaken you?
Oh, then you haven't heard about Fielding.
Fielding? He's in Portugal, is he not?
Yes, in Portugal forever.
What do you mean?
Fielding died 4 weeks ago.
Fielding dead?
Yes, I've just received the news today. A genius has passed from our midst, David.
Yes, William.
And in all the years I knew him, I never once drew his picture.
But surely you asked him to sit for you?
No, never. He was always about, right here in this room 100 times a day. And I never asked him to pose for me. I never dreamed that someday he'd be gone forever.
The loss is not yours alone, Hogarth. The whole world is lost, too.
Oh, if I only had one picture, just one sketch.
Oh, come, don't take it so hard.
Please, David, please, don't try to console me. I'd rather be left alone.
As you wish, my friend. I'll go.
Yes? Come in. Mr. Hogarth, sir.
Oh, yes, Emil? What is it?
A gentleman to see you, sir.
Who is he?
He would give no name. And Mr. Hogarth.
Yes?
He holds his cloak before his face in the strangest manner.
I see. Well, have him come up.
Yes, sir. Oh, here he is now, Mr. Hogarth.
All right, Emil. You may go.
Thank you, sir.
Can I be of any service to you, sir?
No, Hogarth. I have come to be of service to you.
Who are you? Why do you keep your face covered?
I did not wish to shock you with too sudden an appearance. William, I have come back. You, yes. I am Henry Fielding.
But I thought you were dead.
I am dead.
And why? Why do you come back to haunt me?
I do not come to haunt you, my friend. I have come to pose for the picture you want.
You? You have come to pose for me?
Yes.
Yes, but how? How can this be?
There are things I cannot reveal to you, William. Be satisfied. I am here.
Then you are really a ghost.
Call me what you will.
I can't believe my eyes.
Come, William. I'm only permitted a few hours. So prepare to draw me at once.
Yes, yes. Yes, I'll draw you. Oh, this is a miracle. Here. Sit in this chair under the skylight. That's good. Now, face to the right a little. Let your cloak fall back on your shoulders. And sit
perfectly. Hogarth worked feverishly for 2 hours to finish the picture we all know so well.
Come now, David. That story is preposterous.
Of course. David, you made the whole thing up.
Gentlemen, I give you my word it's the truth. If Hogarth were alive today, he'd back me up.
Unfortunately, he is dead.
But I don't need Hogarth to prove it.
Really?
Yes. I know the story is true because I, David Garrick, played the part of Fielding's ghost myself.
David Garrick, one of the greatest actors the world has ever known, was such an amazing performer that he posed as Fielding's ghost, and the famous painter Hogarth really thought he was drawing his dead friend. The picture that Hogarth made at this time is still in existence in the National Portrait Gallery in London, believe it or not. And I will be glad to send a copy of it to anyone sending me a self-addressed and stamped envelope.
You recognize our old favorite China Boy.
question to housewives. If you were to take a vote in your family, how many would say they liked French toast?
How many would like French toast?
Yes.
Oh, I don't need to take a vote on that. I know they all do.
Well, splendid. Well, then you probably give your family French toast quite often. Of course, it makes a delicious and substantial breakfast or lunch or supper. Why, it's welcome at any time of the day.
Yes, I know. I used to give it to the children after they'd been skating in the evening, and they just loved it.
Yes, I can see hot, well-browned French toast with syrup or jelly or honey would hit the spot after you've been outdoors exercising.
And I've served it for dessert, sometimes sprinkled with powdered sugar, and sometimes with hot applesauce on the side to spread over it.
Say, I don't need to tell you about French toast.
No.
Will you tell us how you fix it?
Oh, I guess I fix it like everybody else. I just stir up 2 or 3 eggs,
yes,
add a little milk and a pinch of salt, and then dip slices of bread in this mixture and fry in butter or other fat until they're evenly browned on both sides.
And how long does it take?
Oh, no more than about 10 minutes.
And think how good it tastes.
Yes, I'm hungry for French toast just thinking about it. Guess I'll make some for us when we get home.
That's a fine idea. And this month, when you're buying bread, bear in mind that bakers are featuring a special sunshine layer cake, a fine, tender yellow cake with sugar and chopped almonds on top. Get one of these delicious special sunshine layer cakes tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, Scotch people all over the world will gather together with Hoggies and a wee nip or trois to toast the memory of their beloved poet, Robert Burns. It's a Burns Day. And I'm sure I couldn't say goodbye in a more fitting way than to use the words of Burns. He said, "Farewell, my friends. May good luck hit you, and among her favorites, admit you."